This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And boy, do we have a wonderful book today. Well, you know, it is summertime, and it is time for me to start my promotion of summer reading for children. And boy, I am kicking it off here with Mary Alice Munro's book. It's called Search for Treasure. And I am so thrilled about it because, you know, for me, my entire childhood was spent reading. I spent every minute almost reading if I wasn't running around wild. And so you get both in this book. It's really a beautiful book, and it's called Search for Treasure, and it is a sequel to the best-selling book, The Islanders. Hi, Mary Alice.
Well, hi, Patsy with a Z from Clearwater, one of my favorite places. I love the manatees there.
Oh, yeah, we have them, and it's beautiful. And, of course, when I look at the cover of your book, I think, well, you belong here, too, because we have
the... Oh, my gosh.
Isn't it gorgeous cover?
Well, you know, the thing is, most of people know Mary Alice Munro as an adult novelist, and they, especially in Florida, they've read The Beach House.
Oh, yeah.
And so when they think sea turtles or reptiles like the alligators, they think of me. And that's why I've been to Clearwater so often, is because I love manatees. And I know someday I'm getting a book about the manatees done. I'm just not sure when that's going to happen. So, yes, I love the area. I love summer like you do. And I especially love the landscape, and that's what is at the heart of this book. Florida's going to love this landscape because they know it.
Exactly. I mean, I felt
Southeastern Coast.
I felt at home when I grabbed this book. It's just so beautiful. And I want to mention to my listeners that you are a New York Times best-selling author of the really brilliant series, The Beach House series. And yes, you're right, a lot of people here read your books, and I have read many of them as I am right here sitting by my pool. I have a pool on the intercoast, and so I look out to the Gulf of Mexico, and I am reading, and usually I do that, like, I like to read, like, in the afternoon or on you know, just when it's, there's an excuse to have a little adult beverage as I go along. Because your books are just perfect for it. I can sit there and just chill out.
You know,
and
what I love? I love hearing you say you're reading it, because I have been so happy that a lot of my adult readers, my fans, have been reading this book. It's a middle grade book, but I did not write it,
Oh, no.
I didn't write down. It's a beautiful book for adults.
Well, that is the key. That is the key. You do not, if you want to get the kids, you have to write and treat them as intelligent human beings.
Yeah. And touch, it's how you know what it is I found with both The Islanders and Search for Treasure, which were my very first middle grade books, that I had to just be more sensitive in how I told the story, but the issues were still there. And what I loved about The Islanders, I've introduced this really strong grandmother-grandson relationship, and they heal each other. They really do. Nature heals, but they heal each other. And throughout, in the second book in the series, which is Search for Treasure, but Honey, now the grandmother, her name is Honey, she is a stronger person, and she supports the young Jake and his father, who has a prosthesis. He's military, lost his leg in the war, so she's now stronger. So you see how the family dynamics for three generations is so important. And I'm a grandmother. I wrote this for my grandchildren, and Angela is a mother of middle grade age children. That's 8 to 12. So she wrote it for her children. And between the two of us, I think we really nailed the generation.
I think so, too. Well, we'll mention that Angela Angela May.
Angela May. Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you guys go about writing, but you are a dynamic duo, that's for sure.
Well, it's my first collaboration. I've never done it before, so that was interesting for me, and it just worked out. You know, for my adult novels, I pretty much stick to myself, but with the kids, I just think it's a better book for us doing it together.
And I love the relevancy of it. I think it's so important that here we talk about, you know, a father who's been injured, a father who's gone, you know, to Afghanistan, and there are so many kids out there who know who it's happened to. I mean, we have so many vets who have come back and they've been wounded. They've got all of these problems.
PTSD or something.
Yeah, exactly. So just there, and every one of these families have more kids, you know, around them. So I think that's what makes this book very, very special, I think.
And the other reason I wrote it, I think post-COVID especially, all of us are aware that we need to get outside.
Oh, gosh.
And more importantly, the unplug. What is it? Less screen time, more green time. And we all, here's the key. We all, meaning adults, want our kids to get outside. But when we grew up, our parents would just say, go on outside and play. Because there wasn't as much distraction with the internet and their iPods and their phones and everything that's keeping them plugged in. Today, I think we have to model, go out with the kids. I honestly love this story because it's what I did with my children in Vermont in the summers when they grew up. They're all mothers and fathers now. But when I was a young mother, I used to go out with the kids and learn the names with the kids of the trees and the birds and the critters. And we'd come home, and we didn't have Google, which the kids think is so hysterical when I tell them that. What? No Google? I said, no, we called it the encyclopedia. And we used to go, we used to look things up and identify. And here's the key, Patsy. When the kids know the names of things, they're not afraid of them. And then they go out. This fear keeps them from going out to go explore what they don't know. And I think that's true of adults, too. And here's the key, is I had fun going out with the kids myself. So I hope this book inspires everyone who reads it, adults and children, to go outside together and have fun.
Oh, that's exactly
it's
what
summer.
They need.
Isn't that what summer's all about, is getting outside and getting the bug spray on and going on an adventure?
Well, for me, that's exactly what it was. My childhood was completely, I would, in the morning after I did my chores, I would get a peanut butter jelly sandwich and a jar, in those days we didn't even have a thermos, a jar of Kool-Aid, and I would go out that screen door and for the entire day, and always, of course, with a bag of books. With
so
a bag of books.
To get the
that's
kids today to do that.
Yeah,
that's the question. I challenge you.
Oh,
I challenge everyone.
I know.
So what do we do to help our kids today
and
get outside?
Oh well, I hope that people will listen to us because we had this joy. We had this wonderful
joy
where we were not thinking about all the horrible things that we get on these, you know, on the electronic devices. And and if we can get kids out, now I homeschooled my kids, and we did half of our homeschooling outside. Usually at the botanical gardens or on the beach.
Oh, how lovely.
So it was the same thing, though, but we did all of these little things of, you know, collecting leaves, identifying leaves, doing all, this is so much fun.
It's old school. And here's the thing. It still is fun. You know, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that most adults that you know do not know the name of that big bird that just flew over our heads or that spider or the snake that, especially in Florida, you have so much wildlife. Most of it is harmless. It's the unknown that keeps both adults and kids from going exploring. So I advise people to get out there with a journal, get a little composition notebook, 50 cents at the local store, and draw pictures and identify and have fun. When we were kids, we drew on the walls. I mean, we just were wild. And my mom let us, you know. And it's a kind of magic that is easy accessible for all of us. It's not like Harry Potter kind of magic the kids can never access.
This is real magic.
Real magic.
Real magic.
The other thing I wanted to point out is that I'm reading, this is written for 8 to 12, but I read the book to my own grandson, who's 7. And sometimes I speed up a little bit in certain parts. You know, you can always tell when they get a little antsy in the pants. So you slow down, use your judgment, but here's the key. We now know that when you read aloud to children, it helps them in many ways we didn't know before. Number one, it increases vocabulary. Number two, the kids can relax and get into the story without worrying about struggling with words or identification as if they were reading the books themselves. They make connections that they don't make when they read themselves, especially if they're struggling. So the most important part is that you bond with your grandchild or your child, that moment of reading, that one chapter, maybe not two chapters, just one chapter at night, maybe the lights are dim and you're getting ready for bed, even a middle school child, we're talking 10-year-old, that quiet time of reading and talking about the book and opens the door to conversations with your children about things that matter to them. Because most of the time, if you say, how was your day? Good.
Yeah.
How are your friends? Fine. They don't open up. But when you read a book with a child and engage, that opens that window. And it's such a great opportunity.
Well, I agree. My mother read to us every night. I don't remember a night
that's why you probably were a great reader.
Yes. Well, she was reading to the three of us would be all around her from, you know, the time we could sit up, and she was reading all the time, and that's why by the time I was 3 years old, I could read books, and when I was 5, I read my first adult book. I read a Perry Mason mystery.
Oh, for heaven's sake. That's what I would call advanced.
Yeah, well, you know, Beatrix...
treasure is a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk a little bit about how you developed your characters. I think it's so lovely, the trio that you've come out with. And, well, of course...
Thank you.
I live on the intercoastal, so I love that idea of them just getting away from things. And tell us how you created this entire concept. I think it's brilliant.
Well, I was asked to write a lead series for a new imprint, and it was an easy yes because I always wanted to write for this 8 to 12 group. This is a young group of kids who believe they can do anything. They still have faith and confidence in the world. So I wanted to recreate for children everywhere, whether they lived along the southeastern coast or in New York City or the far Midwest. I wanted to create for them the same experiences my children had in Vermont, which was unplugging, going outdoors, running wild, let their creativity soar. So I created these three characters, Jake, who is a military child, whose father was injured, mom's in the Air Force. I created Macon, who's from a wealthy black family in Atlanta, and Little Lovey, who, if anyone who reads the Beach House series, she was born in that series. So she's the young, smart, know-it-all. She knows nature. She can ride the boat. She's kind of the one who knows the most. And all three children are on this remote island called Deweese, a real place off Isle of Palms, which is in South Carolina, just south of Charleston, where I live. So you cannot access this place, this island, except by ferry or boat. And it has no cars, just golf carts, no stores of any kind, and no internet. So these three kids think they're going to have the worst summer of their lives. And it turns out, of course, from all the adventures, and for all you in Florida, a lot of sea turtles in this book. I'm a 23-year-old veteran sea turtle lady in Charleston, so I know a lot about sea turtles. So the children learn about sea turtles, and they learn about the southeastern landscape. That's why the kids in your area are going to love this, because they know this territory. They know what alligators are. And Search for Treasure, I introduced the meanest, biggest, baddest alligator, Big Al, and I had an agenda. I know that kids can get in trouble with alligators as we encroach upon habitat and even in parks. I wanted to show in a fun way, and even a funny way, proper behavior around alligators, because they're not always friendly. You know, you have to know your way around an alligator, but they're great creatures. We love them. And I created these three children with this scenario so that they knew what was safe, knew what was dangerous, but also they treasure their friendships. I wanted that nostalgia that you were just talking about, Patsy, about summers. You know, those moments outdoors when you're looking for adventure, you're out on the beach or you're in the woods, and you're just lazing away the day. You're getting in a little bit of trouble, but what you discover are great friendships, relationships with the grandparents. Everything is slower and more meaningful, and that's this world I created on Deweese. So that was the why of the writing. And hopefully, when kids, and I'm getting this response, when kids read the book, they love the kids, and they identify with them, and they want to go outdoors. That sparks, I don't have to go outdoors. It's fun to go outdoors.
Exactly.
And the adults, too. That's my goal. That's what I hope, and I think it's happening.
And I mean real outdoors, not outdoors to a theme park, not outdoors to a, you know, one of those parks where you go down the thing, the water parks. A real park.
A real park.
to just sometimes just to walk between the trees and feel the ground. It's so magical.
And that's the word.
And
there's a line, it's so cute. There's a line in the book where they're talking about bioluminescence, you know, when you swish your hand in the water of the ocean and it sparkles. And they're like, the children say, it's magic. And Honey, the grandmother, says, it's not magic, it's nature.
That's exactly, that puts it right in. The nature is so exciting. And as I said, because I was raised that way, I spent the summers running along. There's a place called Misery Bay in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Long, long beach, white beaches, beautiful white beaches. And we used to pick up agates, hundreds of agates. It was unbelievable how much fun we had. And that was our treasure.
Gosh. Well, that's the key. You know, what is the treasure that you're searching for? That's the heart of Search for Treasure. The children are looking for Blackbeard's gold in the story. When they arrive for the summer, they find one old man called Scary Harry. He has discovered a gold doubloon. Now, you all know along the southeastern coast, Blackbeard's treasure, Blackbeard's gold, is missing. So every child worth his or her salt is out there looking for Blackbeard's gold in the summer. So our kids are looking for the treasure, and they've got the metal detectors, and they get in trouble, and they have lots of adventures. But the real treasure that they find in the end is just like you said, Patsy, they find the beauty of the outdoors and their friendships and how simple things can be so much fun.
It is so true, and of course you've written this brilliantly because you are such a great writer. You know, I know many of my listeners will know that, of course, The Beach House became a Hallmark movie. That was the first one. And how many Beach House books are there?
Well, there's seven. The newest one, it's called The Summer of Lost and Found. And that has just come out in paperback this summer. And in fact, it's a really great book if you want to have an adult read the turtle book. And the children read Search for Treasure. You can talk turtles at the end. This is the seventh in the series. And what I love about the Beach House series is I started it, believe it or not, 20 years ago. And Kara, the heroine, was 40. And she's aged over the 20 years, and now she's 60. And I've aged with her, so I love this character. And people have grown with her and watched the family expand. So now, in this book, The Summer of Lost and Found, she's the matriarch. And you see how she's now, like I feel, want to give to the next generation. What can I do to help the young kids? My life has been rich and full. What can I do to help them? So it is sort of hand in glove with the themes of Search for Treasure and the Islanders, where Honey is thinking to herself, what can I do to help these children? What can I do to make their life fuller, richer, help them grow? Because honestly, this is going to be a tough world for these kids. I was listening to the session before you, and they're talking about population and climate
change. I know. And I just wanted to... No, that's it. We hear all of this, and people, there's nothing better than having children. I like lots of children, and to have happy children. It is so... The joy of having children and the joy of then being able to help children and do things like this, what you're doing here by writing this series of books, I think it's fantastic. I know there will be more in this series because...
Yes, we're already beginning the third one. Oh, I have to invite you. I just want to say one thing because it sparked in my mind as you spoke. Go to my Facebook page, Mary Alice Monroe. My grandson has a photograph of him reading Search for Treasure. Before, I'm on book tour, so I'm not there. But I left him his copy, and he's 7 years old, so he's just becoming a reader now. Uh-huh. And he was so proud. And I sent it to him, and my daughter-in-law took the picture, just spontaneous, not posed. So take a look at it on Facebook. It's him sitting on a rocker chair on the front porch, totally engrossed reading.
Oh.
Now that sparked such love in my heart because I wrote this book for him. But I just thought that picture of a child reading by himself on a summer day is what we all want for our grandchildren.
Exactly. And you can go to her Mary Alice Monroe's Facebook page, and also you have a lovely web page. Again, it's just called MaryAliceMonroe.com.
I invite everybody because there's a lot of information there. And if your kids love the book, there's a whole children's section on my website with pictures of Deweese Island and all the animals and a special link to Nature Walks with Judy. So if you homeschool like you did, Patsy, I really wanted homeschool teachers to have an opportunity to teach about nature. So I put up Nature Walks with Judy because it's kid-friendly. It's maybe 2 minutes long, an episode, and it's really helpful for kids.
It is. It's a great and very helpful website. So it's Mary Alice Monroe. The book, of course, is available online, and I'm sure all the bookstores that are open. I'm so glad that bookstores are open because it's a beautiful book. The cover is gorgeous. I'm sure they'll put it right at the front of the store. I mean, if I was a bookstore owner, this book would be right in the window.
Oh, thank you. It's really cute.
It is. It's adorable. And the story is wonderful, very heartwarming, and very important.
It's outdoors.
Yeah. And
they'll read this book and hopefully want to go outdoors.
Exactly.
Their landscape. This is palm trees and beaches
and
parents, alligators. And
parents, take some pictures of your kids reading this book and send them to Mary Alice Monroe.
Yes. I'll post every one.
That's it.
Patsy, when I come down to Clearwater, I am going to check out those manatees again.
Okay. Well, when you come down, next time you come down here, you come to the studio, okay?
I will. I would love that. Thanks for the invite.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Mary Alice Monroe with Angela May. We don't want to forget her because she's done great with you. And the name of the book is Search for Treasure. It's a fantastic book. When you read this one, you'll go back and read the first one, The Islanders.
Aww.
Again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you, and thanks for adding joy to my day.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay, we'll go to commercials, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am looking forward to talking to my next guest. Is he on? Okay.
On.
Okay. I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Don Edward Cook. And the name of this book is Ithiana, Last Daughter of Atlantis. And this is book one, How the World Ended a Millennia Ago. How the World Ended a Millennia Ago. Mouthful. I'm sorry about that. How the World Ended Millennia. How can I say it for me?
I'll say the whole title.
Good.
Ithiana, Last Daughter of Atlantis, Book One.
Oh.
How the World Ended Millennia Ago.
It's wonderful. Great. That was perfect.
Thank you.
Wow. This book, there's so many things I like about this book. One of the first things, of course, I want to mention when I started the book, I'm the kind of person who doesn't look at a lot of stuff sometimes, but I was so happy when I started the book, and I the scene right where you introduce Ithiana and B. I enjoyed that so much, this that chapter. But I will tell people, the book starts, well, you can't start better than this, than with Genesis. So from there, you take us into an idea and a really special, very special look at the world. So you tell me, what do you want people to know about this book?
Well, first of all, Patsy, It's obviously the first in a series, and it has the main character starting off with being the daughter of a rich father, a man who made his fortune in property sales and property management, even going on Atlantis's version of television and advertising rentals and sales for his properties. He's in the kind of landlord who's altruistic too. But anyway, I decided to start from where someone's search for the truth begins, and it often begins with an inciting incident. And in the main character's case, it was when her mother died, and how she died, of what I termed dark times heartbreak syndrome, which is simple dying of heartbreak these days. But that can lead to so many other physical illnesses that can kill you. And so I decided to have her go on an informal quest that when I jumped to the day of just before her graduation, I decided to have her outline her case towards the scholars at an Atlantean university type institution. And I had her outline her theory of doom, which showed how everything was leading up to doomsday as far as the Atlanteans were concerned, and how she planned to have people escape in a spacecraft, a space ark, if you will, to another planet, and that more research needed to be done. And eventually she got the doctorate in the second chapter, she graduates, but at a graduation that is plagued with violence by protesters who go crazy and just attack the guests, the grads, the faculty, the staff, as if they were just like a riot. And at the end, I tell the reader that the project is set up, and they eventually come to the conclusion that they have to build this space ark or buy a spacecraft that they can refurbish. And they try to get help from their own Atlantean government, but because it was so indebted, they can't count on the government for help, so they take the case to the ancient version of the United Nations, which I term the League of Realms. And they also give thumbs down because they think the idea of such a disaster is ludicrous. And I was partly inspired to write this book, Patsy, not just by the Genesis account and what I've learned about Atlantis, but also by a 1951 film called When Worlds Collide. It's I worked that in, plus also worked in a few other elements from Star Wars, like where the main character manages to talk her way out of a traffic ticket, or as I call it, a writ of traffic, through the use of mental powers on a motorcycle police officer or a road knight.
I love that.
Yeah, and using combination of mental powers and feminine charm, she gets out of the traffic ticket and is yet another road rat that she beats.
Well,
how many would just love to do that? With when they're stopped by a cop.
Well, tell us about Ithi, because I think it's very clever, and tell us how you came out with the idea of her special abilities.
Well, I decided to use the possibility of people having these extreme mental powers back before the flood, and in Atlantis in particular, plus the idea of people once having these abilities, but after the flood, God curtailed them so that we're much more limited in what our mental abilities are. We can still think and reason and plan and do it with logic and with hunches, but nowhere near the degree that Ithiana and others like her are able to do up till the day of the flood.
Well, do you want to explain what she can do here? For example, when I read the prologue, and you describe her abilities, and also introduce her adopted sister B. Right from that moment on, I knew that I was going to enjoy this book.
Yeah. Anyway, I decided to use her mental powers, her extremely strong mental powers, as the mother of all other superpowers that somebody can have, that they can either use them or develop them. Because it all starts in the mind. Like, if someone can will themselves to bend objects with their mind, like taking a fork and twisting it around, or they can also apply that same power to their arms and legs, so they can have super strength and run so fast they make the Flash look like a snail. And other things about being super intelligent, about how to figure out problems, how to solve problems, how to come up with great theories in any field, and hypotheses, and be proven right a lot of the time. But also give her some deficits. Like, you know how sometimes not every woman, thank God, but certain women can have a princessy type personality when things don't go their way, even if they can be the most altruistic person you'll ever meet. They can still have a lesser side where they can be princessy and have a rich girl's entitled attitude. And that is, and where she could, she's not exactly a pure person. Her sister Bianya, or B, is more pure, far more pure, and that Ithiana has a bit of a naughty streak that she inherited from both her mom and her dad.
Well, there are so many things in this book that I got a kick out of because so much is relevant. I like in the beginning of chapter 3 where you're writing about the Women's Coven of Sciences in Lemuria. You're writing about how a group has to go through levels to in order to talk about something else or to get involved in something else, and with all this recent news we've had of censors and people, you know, censoring, I thought it was right on.
Yes, and you know what? Born and raised in Canada, we have a very bureaucratic-oriented culture here. Like, in most other countries, their cultures are based upon certain more wider ideals, such as America being based on the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Britain being based on the similar ideals along with fair play. The French based on artistic flair. Germans on precision. Italians on lovable chaos. And a whole host of other cultures having their own cultural values that are more expressed in wider concepts. But Canada, we tend to rely more on our bureaucracies and institutions to define our culture than any other culture on earth. And that it's a case of we don't define ourselves by who we are 9 times out of 10, but instead by who we're not. And for the most part, we usually tag the word idea of bureaucracy and having to go through level after level after level is what I incorporate into the book. And I based Atlantis partly on Canada, but also incorporating other features of the four other major English-speaking nations like the UK, US, Australia, and New Zealand into the mix to make up Atlantis, or as I formally call it, the Federal Kingdom of Atlantis. And my main character's home province, or republic province, not all of them have monarchy systems. Some of them are actually republics, within the greater kingdom. I have it called Calitarion. It's a combination of the names California and Ontario, because they have one thing, and they have a lot in common, California and Ontario, including, I might add, Patsy. They are the, in their respective countries, California and Ontario are the most indebted subnational jurisdictions in their two countries. California is the most indebted state in the Union, and Ontario is not only the most indebted province of Canada, but it's also the most indebted subnational jurisdiction of its type on the planet. Scary, huh?
Yeah, it is. It is. And one of the, you know, when a book is as how, in a way, your book is complex, but in the end, when you look at it, it is a story of that you've managed to create these characters that we care about and we want to know more about, and what's going to happen. I mean, I can see why we're going to need a book too. How did you, you know, you put a lot of thought into this book. This is not one of these books that, you know, somebody's rushed off in during the pandemic period.
Yeah. In fact, this was when I wrapped up work on this book in terms of the writing, it was a few weeks or months before the end of the pandemic, before the start of the pandemic, the coronavirus crisis, I call it. The copyright date is 2020, and I wrapped up work on it before Canada really went into full mode lockdown. So I wrapped up work around February or March thereabouts, and I decided to simply take the world that I knew and that I learned about over the last 50 or 60 so years, plus the first plus 30 or 20 or 30, maybe 40 years before I was born, and built Atlantis around that. The idea of the share market crashes, as in market shares, some older people might understand that shares and stocks are the same thing, but younger readers might think, well, it's magical, because they may have a different set of priorities, but shares and stocks are the same thing, so I decided to have share market crashes increasing in frequency. And I used the idea of the stock market crash in 1929 and how devastating that became and the effects after that to base the economic messes that Atlantis went through. And also the Cold War between the West and the East, which in its own way is heating up again over Ukraine. I decided to have Lemuria basically being like a radical communist state like China, and what Russia was in terms of communism and other communist dictatorships. And I thought, what if Lemuria was such a socialist dictatorship only run by women? And I decided to do that, and I even had one of the main characters' best friends and mentors, Dr. Zakrovia, being a defector from Lemuria. And how she defected is pretty interesting.
Definitely. Now, I like the layout of the book. I like this. Actually, I enjoy reading these headlines as you have, you know, throughout the book, because it just, I think it adds something to it. It really makes it interesting. And I can go back, because I do find that, like, I've read, you know, I will read, you know, 50 pages, and then I'll remember something that you talked about, because the interesting thing about your book is that it has the connections to what's actually happening in the world. And so you want to see the parallels, and I enjoyed that so much. I enjoyed that I could remember, like, in a section, perhaps, where you're talking about Noah's Land and High Heels reunion. I could go back to that particular spot and reread it because it's fascinating. It's
yes. You know, I also used the science behind the flood as creationists have explained how it could be. And I took the idea of just one continent, and it wasn't called Atlantis in the book, but Atlantis just happened to be the greatest power on Earth today. But I used maps and illustrations of a place of the supercontinent Rodinia, not Pangaea, but Rodinia, that's kind of like a big claw with a scorpion's tail attached to it, and it just looks like. And that's how, and I'm sure you saw at the map that it looks a lot like a big, huge claw with a scorpion's tail attached to it.
Yes, and I like that you have in the front you have a dramatis personae, so we can keep the characters straight. So I think that's very helpful.
Yes, and with pronunciation keys
yes.
along with it because it'll help. Because I use the emphasized syllables, put them in capitals, and the lesser emphasized syllables in lowercase. And I did that because I wanted to help people to understand how they're pronounced and who they are. And I also simply put, Patsy, I decided to have my Atlantis, my world of Atlantis, the world of Noah's Day in the book. I took the world I've known, like I said, and Atlanteanized it. And I used Greek, Roman, Egyptian, Babylonian influences to style my Atlantis. And even the, the coat of arms for Lemurians, basing that partly on the beast of revelations, namely lioness's heads, she-bear's heads, leopard's heads, and a dragon snake-like head. That's actually a lion-like head, but more reptilian dragon-like than anything. And with coat of arms being flanked by soldier ants and an ant queen at the top.
Well, I really enjoyed reading this book. The cover is beautiful. It's a wonderful cover. And the name of the book is Ithiana, Last Daughter of Atlantis. This is a series, and this is book one, How the World Ended Millennia Ago. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. How do my listeners find you? Are you on Facebook?
I have a website. It's donnyverse.com, donnyverse.com.
Donnyverse.com. Okay. Well, people go there. I'm sure that once you start reading this book, it always happens with sci-fi books. Once you start reading them and you get into the characters, the names come to you easily. You remember them. And I think you've done a great job. I assume you're finishing book two now?
I'm working on the editing process, and I am. It's in the editing process, and I'm wrapping up initial work on that, and it sort of and book two picks up where book one leaves off, more or less.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, and as soon as you have a release date for the new book, you let me know, okay?
No problem.
Okay. Again, that's Don Edward Cook, and the website is Donnyverse, right?
Yes, Donnyverse.com.
Donnyverse.com. Okay, everybody. Have a look at it. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. Oh, well. That hour went fast. Two wonderful books and two beautiful covers. I think, hold them up to the Tubi YouTube thing. You know, a great cover really makes a difference. I love these covers. Now, wow. What's happening? We're going to have Bill Larson on soon, and I know there's some more people with intellectual property questions, so please send them in to me. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com, patsy.radio@gmail.com, and you can go to my website, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And I have more interviews up there, and I'm going to have more information for summer reading for children. Jim Lamb is going to be doing us a list that we're going to put up, and with recommendations of books to read during the summer. So that's going to be fun. Rita Moreau is going to be coming in here, and she's going to be doing some book buzzes, because we need some more book buzzes for all of the wonderful books that we have had on Joy on Paper recently. And I love when she comes in. She, of course, will do one for, well, she will do one. I know she will do one for the Search for the Treasure. Anyway, we will have a lot of things happening this summer. And what am I talking about? Next Tuesday, Devon Miller is going to be sitting here in this chair, right here behind the Tantalk Radio Network microphone, and he's going to be smiling at Big Ed in the control room, because he is going to host Joy on Paper for the day. And I am so excited for him. He recently graduated from college, so he will be able to talk all about that. He will be able to talk about his wonderful, his own book series, the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock series. And he's going to be here, and he's going to be talking to all of you about what he's been doing and what he's up to, and interviewing two authors. So I am really, really excited about having him do that. And it's going to be the first time that I will be in Texas, and I will be listening. I will be listening to him. Maybe I'll be watching on YouTube, because it's really exciting that he's going to take over, because Devon Miller is such a multi-talented young man, and I'm just so thrilled that he is part of Joy on Paper. You know, I'm thrilled with all of the people who are involved with Joy on Paper, including Bria Burton. I wanted to mention her. She's done us another wonderful sci-fi book buzz, which we'll play. We'll play it next Tuesday. I will have Devon play it, because I know Devon Miller loves Bria Burton's books, and so that will be just perfect. Anyway, everybody, start writing, because things are happening. You have to get out there. Because remember what I always tell everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, or a movie like my guest today, because she had her movie, The Beach, Mary Alice Monroe had her book turned into a Hallmark movie. It's fantastic. It's a really good movie. They play it every once in a while. I watch it every time. So you never know. It could happen to you, but you have to start writing. That's the key, Ted. Okay, everybody, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. Okay, now. Bye-bye now.